You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Thursday morning. It's December 4th, 2025, and it's another beautiful, but cold morning to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're spending your mornings, listening across the Civic Media radio network. Or however else you got here, we appreciate you getting your day started where it is 5 below zero here on Lake Wissota right now. I got a question for you. What statistic about you would you like to know? Spotify is handing out its Wrapped summaries so that its users know which artists and songs they played the most during 2025. But there's news coverage of the Spotify rap thing. It's become an annual tradition now. You know, somebody came up with a good idea there. And now other apps are copying it. There are apps that give you an annual summary of the food you ordered through them, the video games you played, the workouts you started, maybe the number of workouts you finished. So what would you like to see? Because I was thinking about that for myself here, and I'll share my Spotify stats in a moment. But for me, it feels like it started with credit cards, because it was some years back that mine started sending annual reviews to help you see at a glance where you were spending your money, and it would break it down by category. And that was kind of useful, and it was kind of scary. And so now we've got apps that do this. I mean, our watches and our phones can tell us stats about the number of steps we take, hours of sleep, even the average number of breaths we take in an hour, the number of heartbeats. Those are all fine and good, but there are other statistics about myself I wish someone would send me. For example, as a kid, I'd like to know the stats. How many hours of Gilligan's Island did I watch as a kid? And which episodes got the most views? How many times did Gilligan get hit on the head with a coconut? But then to the present day, an app that would show me, here's how many cups of coffee you had this year. Cups of coffee. How many old fashions did I have this year? How many times did I walk into a room and say, now why did I walk into this room? Because that graph appears to be going upward. What's that about you would give you a laugh or maybe a wince? And it can be, it doesn't have to, you don't have to go for cornball here. You can be stats that you would genuinely like to know about yourself. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842, or use the Civic Media app to call us or text us or record a little voice note. It's kind of in line with the guilty pleasures music that we talked about yesterday, because Spotify, in that case, will show you the actual stats. These are hard statistics. Alicia on YouTube says, my top song will be I'll Sleep When I'm Dead, which is fitting. Yes, Alicia, I totally believe that for you, you hardworking soul. So what about you? What kind of stats, serious or unserious, would you like to know? Coming up on the program today, Congressman Mark Pocan will be joining us and talking a bit about how Washington, D.C. is back in business, but the gridlock does not appear to have been alleviated at all since it's mostly existing in the Republican caucuses, but we'll see if anything's getting done in D.C. We'll also talk to Sean O'Malley this morning about your money in the markets. And again, even though D.C. is back at work, the statistics that people need to make economic decisions is still missing in action. And that just makes it that much harder for us to do anything other than endure the current AI bubble. And while that might make, folks in the White House feel good that the economy is propped up by AI, we kind of like the real numbers, if that were to be possible. Let's see, temperatures around the state right now. Oh, my goodness. Let's see. The The low temperature, it says here, is 17 below. Where is that? Oh, that's in Siren, is at 17 below right now. We've got 15 below in Solon Springs, 11 below in Hayward and in Phillips, 11 below in Rice Lake as well, 13 below in Black River Falls. A lot of single digits above or single digits below zero going on around there. So, you know, definitely get those kids bundled up and get them out the door. While you think about what kind of, again, what kind of life statistic would you like to see about yourself? Cindy in Appleton is calling us bright and early at 6:11 this morning. Cindy, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. So you thought about it. Is there a stat you'd like to know about yourself?
Well, I get to the point where I think at a certain age, you just don't care anymore because life is getting shorter. And my yes. one motto now is, as long as I can find my way home, I'm still good.
Which, thankfully, we've got the phones with the GPS and the everything else. Yeah, it's definitely not a matter of that. I don't think a statistic would naturally make me, you know, care to do something different. It's now just out of curiosity, where it's like, how many times did I do such and such a thing? But yeah, we are getting to be a little cynical and set in our ways now at a certain point, Cindy.
Yep, and maybe there's just some things you don't want to know, Pat.
There's definitely things I don't want to know, and that's why I'm not talking about them on the radio. But yes, exactly. Cindy, thanks for calling in. Hope you have a great day.
You too.
All right. Yep. See ya. Again, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Parker Olson standing by in Madison Studio A2 producing this little shindig. Let's see. Parker, are you on Spotify? Have you seen your Wrapped for the year?
Oh, I'm on Spotify, Pat.
Okay.
I
would hope so.
And
because, he said, making it into a commercial.
Oh, boy.
You can pod this program, listening anytime on Spotify. Follow us as a podcast. Needless to say, I've got some good statistics for that one. But anyway, that's the podcast part of it. But did you learn anything about yourself from your Spotify Wrapped?
Did I learn anything? You know what, Pat? I learned that one of the people on my top artists, I have no idea who they are. I have zero clue. Not any idea. And this is really weird because I have a large sample size. I have over 52,000 minutes. So
52,000 minutes listened. Okay.
And that's actually low. But, for
and
me.
that's giving you artists that you don't think you've actually played.
I think what it is from while I was in college, my guess is used like a composer from study music I had.
Okay, that's so like streaming background music, things
yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
I can totally see that because there's times when I do that. Sure. Yes, let's see, Tony up in Ashland. I learned my kids listen to more music than me. Yes, that is, there are definitely people, I've already seen that in social media posts, who don't know what their actual Spotify numbers are because they're playing music for the kids or the kids grab the phone and they're doing things.
Yeah.
Alicia up on YouTube, yes, it is cold. I'm wearing two jackets, she says. Yeah, it is that kind of a day. To no one's surprise, Spotify also tells you your listening age based on what you're listening to. And so the first stat that I saw that I'm holding up for Parker here, my listening age is I'm listening like a 65-year-old man.
Hey.
Well, being a 61-year-old man, I guess I'm not that far off. That makes sense. And Parker's already guessed. You can guess my top genre. Again, holding up my screen for him. It is, of course, yacht rock.
Duh.
But then the second one is called J-pop. I have absolutely no idea what J-pop is. I know it's not K-pop. No. Third is smooth jazz, which would be the background listening.
That's
soul, because I'd love to listen to Motown. And then rock, which is, you know, again, not yacht rock, but some of the, you know, 80s,
yeah.
you know, 70s, 80s. Rock and roll.
J-pop, it looks like, is Japanese pop music.
I have never listened to a single one of those things.
I bet that it's just like somehow intertwined with something that you've been listening to.
And my number one album and number one artist is Taylor Swift's Life of a Showgirl because...
Sure.
It's the only music I've actually really listened to on Spotify. I'm an Apple guy. I listen to almost everything through Apple or through some other services. You know, I use Spotify because that's where we pod the program. So I've got podcasts on there. Sure. And Life of a Showgirl came out while we were in Nashville, and I had Spotify to advertise that they were going to have it early. So I'm like, okay, I downloaded it and everything. So that's why it's my number one artist, because it's pretty much the only one. Alicia says, yeah, Japanese pop music. I really don't know. I'd love to know the example of that. So I'm going to have to go looking for that. Tony puts in another plug for Apple Music. Oh, look at Alicia. At age 41, my listening age was 23.
You're younger than me.
Good for you.
Mine was 27.
Here's a comment from somebody saying, good Lord, imagine if porn websites sent usage summaries.
You know.
As Hall & Oates used to say, some things are better left unsaid.
Some
strings are better left undone. Yeah. Some doors are better left unopened.
The stat question of the day, that probably, yeah.
Yeah. There's things you want to know that you're genuinely curious about.
Yeah.
And
other ones that you shouldn't know about.
Yep. And other things, not so much. I do know from a statistic standpoint, I do know how many morning shows I've done here on Civic Media, because I put a little tally at the top of my notes every day. Welcome to show number 700. So does that make me, who did the 700 club? Was that Jim and Tammy Faye Baker? Was that them? So we've now joined the 700 club, praise God, doing this show here. And thank you for being a part of however many of those you've managed to endure. I appreciate that very much. Also coming up on the show, we'll have Joe Zepecki coming up to talk about the Mandela Barnes entry into the governor's race and what that does to the Democratic field. Sherita Booker is coming along in just about 5 minutes now to tell us about some of the weekend events, including one right here in Chippewa Falls. So all of that is along the way. But one news story that I wanted to mention as well before we took off here and moved on to the rest of the show. And it's a story that didn't get a lot of traction right away because there's a lot going on. But it is a little troubling to learn that a Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice, Annette Ziegler, the former Chief Justice before progressives took over the court, and Slate magazine broke this first, but I'm reading from Bruce Murphy in Urban Milwaukee, his interpretation of it, saying that Annette Ziegler was caught turning a U.S. Supreme Court decision on its head to justify her dissent in a case that was decided last week about the congressional district maps in Wisconsin. She used a fake quote to defend an extreme Republican gerrymander. Now, even conservative Brian Hagedorn joined the court's four liberals in saying that there must be these three-judge panels appointed to review the congressional maps and maybe undo the Republican gerrymander that's been in there. But Ziegler cited a U.S. Supreme Court decision, Moore v. Harper, and claimed the ruling declared the role of state courts in congressional redistricting is, quote, exceedingly limited. The problem is, as Slate discovered, and Mark Joseph Stern wrote the article, the quotation appears nowhere in the ruling. Even the word exceedingly, not exceedingly limited, appears nowhere in the ruling. And even if it's just a misquote, it's still a complete misrepresentation of the decision. As Bruce writes, the Moore ruling held the opposite of what Ziegler claims, concluding that state courts can play a legitimate, meaningful role in congressional redistricting. Now, she retracted and then put out a new decision or a new version of her dissent, but it still basically held that this court case said something that it didn't actually say. And that's a big no-no, though I guess it is par for the course in MAGA world. Sherita Booker is on the way to talk about events coming up this weekend. Live from the lake, I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back. Oh, I hear a little sleigh bell action going on behind me. That's supposedly my Pavlovian cue to tell you about the Text to Win contest, and our keyword this hour is chance, C-H-A-N-C-E. Use the Civic Media app to text that to us before 8 a.m. to be entered into the grown-up gift list text to win contest through Civic Media. All right, we've got plenty of other issues to cover today with our friends Hans Breitenmoser, a dairy farmer from up near Merrill, Sheila Everhart from the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association, Gene Bond from Green Lake County, who owns a wedding barn-type venue. We're going to talk about what happened in the legislature with that, or more importantly, what didn't happen with it in just a bit. Hans, as always, let's start with you. Did you have a good Thanksgiving weekend?
Good morning, Pat. I sure did. You bet.
Wonderful. And we've got several other things that are happening. The legislature had their session, but there are things that are yet to come here, not the least of which is the Wisconsin Farmers Union annual convention. That's December 13th and 14th in the Dells. What are going to be the hot topics there?
Oh, boy. There's going to be all sorts of hot topics, as there often is at the annual convention. It's our opportunity as farmers and members of Wisconsin Farmers Union to get together and decide through honest debate what we stand for and what our legislative priorities are. I mean, I'm sure we'll be talking about immigration and antitrust legislation, local control, milk prices, local food systems, and even data centers and how they're impacting rural areas. So there's going to be plenty to discuss. And we'll also have an election. And incidentally, our friend Sheila is running for the board there as well.
So. Oh, well, what a good pivot that is, Sheila. So you're running for the board and you're going to tell us about how the Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation has its annual meeting in the Dells a week prior on December 7th and 8th. Are you still with us, Sheila? Oh, looks like she dropped out there. We'll see if she pops back up here in just a second here. And so let's just go ahead and turn our attention to what happened and what didn't happen in the legislature this time around. And Hans, while we wait for Sheila to come back in, you just set it up real quick. Plenty of farms out there have set up these, wedding type venues or special event venues. And they really got caught up in the so-called liquor license reforming that was done in the last legislative session.
Yeah, and I'm glad that Jean's on because she can speak to this far better than I can. I'm merely a dairy farmer. Cows are easy. People are hard. I leave it to Jean to entertain us and make sure that by God we can have a drink when we're at a venue like an event barn and so forth. But yeah, it does seem like these types of venues are kind of getting stomped on and being unfairly targeted. And it's kind of bizarre to me because Wisconsin does have a long history of entertaining ourselves out in the countryside. And so I'm interested to see what Gene's got to say.
Yeah, Gene is with the Farm View Event Barn in Berlin. And Gene, what is it that you were hoping to see from the legislature in this fall session?
Well, we were hoping to see that they recognize the restrictive nature of that Act 73 and that it was going to benefit the farmers and our rural economy if they would at least just let those rural venues, their seasonal ones, operate in a way that's profitable for them. That's basically why they're in operation, is to help profitability on the farm. And we are struggling to find legislators that are willing to step up and say, we recognize it's important to keep these barns in beautiful shape across Wisconsin and allow people to come on the farm and learn about the farm and let these farmers use what they have to their best ability and diversify their income.
Yeah, I mean, this Act 73 you talked about deals with essentially the three-tier system of either brewing or distilling alcohol. Then there's the distribution system. Then there's the retail system. And while some of it was rather archaic law that needed updating for reasons we can only speculate on, the wedding barn venues were really put on the outs by this. I don't know if they felt threatened by the Tavern League or what. But Sheila, you passed along to me all of the paperwork that's got to get done now for wedding barns that just want to do this a few days a year. Talk about how restrictive that paperwork has become.
Well, I think Jean can address that much closer as she's really researched all of those documents. But, it's surprising, Pat. These farms are going to be losing 75% of their income because of the law that will go into effect January 1st of 2026, reducing the opportunity to rent their space for one time a month or six per year. And the paperwork includes about a four-page application for having consumption served on the property, private property, at a private event. And the cost of the permit is $300. So not only are you forcing people to reduce the number of events they can have, you're restricting what can be served at those events, including no spirits. And I know we're a state that promotes the old fashioned as one of the beverages of choice. Yet these private party invitation only wedding barns on private land cannot serve an old fashioned because the way the law was written.
That's really something.
Just crazy.
Gene, how
it just doesn't make sense.
How many events were being held at a lot of these typical venues compared to what the new law says in terms of restrictions?
Well, I think many of us, again, were seasonal, and ideally it was one a week throughout the 6 months of May through October. So 24, I know some places were able to have enough help to be able to have two a weekend. So it varied a lot throughout, and that was the beauty of it. You could do as many as you felt you could accommodate on your property, especially with us. I just want to back up a little and explain the lawsuit that was decided on November 19th was quite a learning experience for me being part of that. So it was heard on a rational basis, which this is the judge's words. That means it could be based on speculation that is unsupported by any evidence or data. And he could just decide that if there was any chance or conceivable thought that some of these arguments could be true, there was no basis for them, but if they could be true, he had to rule in favor of those defendants. So some of the arguments they had were that we were in rural areas and far from help. I am 4.5 miles from my local sheriff's office. Some of their basis was that because there was free alcohol offered, that conceivably not letting us have more than six would move these events to places with liquor license and thereby reducing the amount of free alcohol and reducing the number of drunk driving incidents in Wisconsin. Now, anybody with sense knows, even if a couple has to go to a place in town for their wedding, they're still going to end up having free alcohol for their guests. So a lot of it was interesting to hear the rationale, and bottom line, this decision did not say that we cannot change this law for the better. It agreed that reduced numbers of events could indeed reduce the number of free drinks being given out in Wisconsin. So people will still hear that we are trying to get legislators to change those numbers, and that I just want to make sure they understand that this lawsuit in no way is preventing that effort from continuing. Right.
And Hans, what does that tell us about the political environment at the Capitol when there's all kinds of, you know, majority Republican legislators who represent rural districts, and yet they're having a tough time, you know, supporting some of these small farm-based businesses in their districts? What can we glean from that?
Well, I would suggest we can glean that it's time for a change and we need some different legislators. You know, and that brings me to a thought. We're right around the corner from a spring election, and spring elections are county board elections. And so, having been on the county board for 10 years, a number of years ago, this is a good time for people to really think about getting on the local, you know, getting into local government, because this is a place where the county's association can push back and local governments can push back and say, look, this is not what we signed up for. This is not what's helping our community. But the only way that that happens is if, number one, you get out and vote. And number two, you think about local government and how it impacts and what your role might be. And I'm encouraging everybody to run for county board. And think about that quickly, because papers need to be turned in here in probably, 30 days or so.
Yeah,
for that spring election, your nomination.
Yes, the window is now open to, and we are absolutely, you know, nonstop advocates for running for local office and starting to make a difference that way. Gene, it definitely sounds like this is still an uphill road, but the session is not done yet. They'll meet again in January, February, maybe into March. So what is it that you would like folks listening to say to their state legislator about this?
I would like them to tell their legislators these businesses, these farms deserve to operate like all the ones that are exempted by this bill, and that they should consider signing on to. We do have a proposed piece of legislation that will allow us to operate profitably, and they should consider signing on to that, because it doesn't just help the farmers, it helps the other small businesses in the area. And it's something people love. People love coming out to these venues. They love their pictures with the crops in the background and the property, beautiful properties. And there's plenty of weddings to go around. There's no reason to restrict one over another. And then to claim that we're dangerous in some way is just...
It seems like, you know, doing something 20 days out of the year compared to a lot of places that are open 365, you know, the math ain't mathing on that as far
and
as.
And yet, if I sell the alcohol, mm-hmm. the danger disappears, because this new law also mandates everyone, most of us already did, but everyone have a licensed bartender serving any alcohol. So just the very fact that I sell it somehow, then I'm fine. I can have as many as I want. So
yeah.
We're still working on this, and I hope people can get behind it. It's overregulation, and it's not necessary.
Gene Bond from FarmView Event Barn in Berlin. Thank you very much for the insight on that. Sheila Everhart from the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association. I got less than 30 seconds here, but we heard about the Farmers Union convention coming up. What can you tell us quickly about the Farm Bureau Federation annual meeting in the Dells December 7th and 8th?
Yes. If you're a farmer, get involved with grassroots organizations, whether it's Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation or Wisconsin Farmers Union. Wisconsin Farm Bureau Federation is represented in 66 of our 72 counties. They will have about 300 delegates voting on policy on December 8th, farmland preservation, solar, alternative energy, healthcare, and our roads. So get involved. And of course, agricultural tourism, how to support the family farm with agricultural tourism. So get involved with grassroots efforts.
All
please
right.
contact your elected officials.
Okay.
Have them sign on to a trailer bill that will give a lifeline to these agricultural event
sounds
venues.
Good.
Solely by Sheila, increasing your events to 36.
I got
to
run.
Get out there and get involved. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sheila and Hans and Gene. Our keyword again, chance by 8 o'clock. Text that in our text to win contest, grown-up gift list. Back after this, you're up north. Welcome back. We've got Dennis McBride, the mayor of Wauwatosa, standing by to talk about his new book out about the insanity that was the year 2020 and what a first-year mayor took away from lessons. Our question of the day has been, is Cyber Monday still a thing for you? And Craig notes on Facebook, Cyber Monday is only for electronics, nothing else. Black Friday is one day only, the Friday after Thanksgiving. They seem to forget this every single year. I don't think they forget it. It's a very intentional thing. I mean, President's Day sales that seem to go on for the entire month. Your Labor Day specials, again, they last a month. Whatever kind of a retail hook is out there, they're going to take advantage of it. I wanted to know if it's still special for any of you on Cyber Monday. Also, a lot of thanks to folks who have already entered our grown-up gift list text to win contest. Now, it's not going on right now. We did it during our 7 a.m. hour, And we're going to do it again in the 9 a.m. hour with Matt Nair on air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, different keyword. So stick around. That'll be your next chance to text in and win. But I wanted to thank Jeff and Cleghorn for sending in a keyword to us. We got a few others along the way from Cassandra in New London, from Tom in Hartford, John in Oshkosh, Rosemary in Oliva, and Beth in Appleton, and Patty in Eau Claire. Thanks to you and all the others that we see coming through that texted in during the 7 a.m. hour. Again, be sure to look for your next chance to win at 9, then 11, and then 1, 3, 5, and 7 p.m. to enter our grown-up gift list text to win contest, a daily prize of $200 cash, and some great grand prizes as well. Details at civicmedia.us. All right, Dennis McBride was with us a little bit earlier to wish happy birthday to Dr. Kristen Lyerly, and now he joins us now as a guest to talk all about the book that he put together, A City on the Edge, about his time as a brand new mayor in Wauwatosa in 2020. I know people want to kind of forget about 2020. You cannot. That pandemic and all the unrest is going to be part of American history. And we had to very much live it at the time, especially Dennis as mayor at the time. Dennis McBride, good morning. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you. It's good to be back. Your point about forgetting 2020 shows the peril in doing that. Again, you know, the old expression is those who forget history are condemned to repeat it. And that's actually one of the main themes of my book. If you go into the last two chapters, I talk a lot about how the events of 2020 still affect us and are still with us in a way. So we can chat about that. But
oh, absolutely. I mean, it is to me that, you know, the term you hear is memory hole, that we've memory holed the pandemic. When, I mean, just this morning, I saw a commercial for Paxlovid. And it was kind of giving the same old, you know, the drug interactions can include blah, blah, blah. And I said to Sherry, my wife, I said, you know, instead of the usual drug commercial, the announcer should say something like, hey, I know y'all want to forget, but a million Americans died of this and it's still out there and it's still killing people. You got to take it seriously. And yet, if we go back and look at 2020, I mean, one of the fights you and others had to have was to listen to science.
Exactly. You know, in the book, I go back as well to the Spanish flu pandemic of 1918 to 1920. And I talk about how science was more or less prepared for that, but human nature was not. And then we started acting exactly the same way 100 years later when COVID-19 came in. And now we're doing it again. We have a federal government that is backing away from science and coming up with goofy theories about how vaccines don't work. Vaccines got us through the pandemic. We solved that, and now we're backtracking on that. And now we have measles outbreaks everywhere. It's we're heading back into the insanity that we suffered from in 2020.
No doubt about that. Dennis McBride is our guest. I've gotten ahead of myself because this all happened and we haven't gotten yet to George Floyd and the police protests and all that. But this all happens, Dennis, as you're the newly elected mayor of Wauwatosa. So why don't we get back to the very beginning before any of this happened? You thought about running for mayor and ran. It's a half tongue in cheek question to ask with this kind of hindsight, but why? Why'd you decide at the time?
Well, everybody asked me the same question. They say, well, when you filed your papers in December of 2019, you probably couldn't have figured out that 2020 was going to be what it was. And of course not. Nobody could have anticipated that. I make the point in literally the first paragraph, 2020 is a year we will always remember. It's one of those significant years of history that will go down forever. I was an alderman for 10 years. I was a U.S. government attorney for over 25 years. I have served at all levels of government, both as a volunteer and as an elected official. This is in my genes. It's in my makeup. I was determined to serve my hometown, and I just happened to arrive in the middle of a global pandemic, and then other things happened. We had 98 days and nights of racial protests in Wauwatosa, 40 nights at my house. We had a mass shooting at the state's busiest shopping mall. And we were a significant place in the 2020 presidential election, curiously. So yeah. The way I sold the book was to say Wauwatosa was a microcosm of everything that was happening in America in 2020.
Yeah, it truly was. And for folks who weren't, you know, in or around Tosa or the Milwaukee area at the time, you know, what was it? Again, it's a microcosm. Things were happening all over. But why specifically in Tosa and even including, you know, weeks of protests at your house? What is it that was, remind people of what was happening in 2020 closer to home?
Well, we had a police officer who ironically was black. He had shot and killed three men of color in the 5 years leading up to my mayoral tenure. 2.5 months before I became mayor was his last shooting. And nothing happened until George Floyd was murdered in Minneapolis. And then, of course, nationally and internationally, protests broke out. But in Wauwatosa, because of that police officer, his name was Joseph Mensah, we had 98 days and nights of protests here. We also, there, as I said, 40 days and nights at my house, and that was on the misguided notion that the mayor could fire a police officer. Under state law, only the police and fire commission can hire, fire, and discipline police officers. I had no role in that, and yet I had people outside my house day after day after day.
To what degree did that anger, and I've spoken a lot about that, incredibly justifiable anger, but as you know, for a lot of people, that anger crossed a line when it turned into, you know, riots and fires and things like that, or even on a smaller scale, the misunderstanding that a mayor can hire and fire police officers. So again, as you look back at it, I mean, you can't change history, but what kind of notes would there be for the future when it comes to people that feel very strongly, very angry about something like unjustifiable police violence, and they want to do something about it?
Well, I served for 24 years at the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. I represented people who are the victims of job discrimination based on race and sex and religion and age and disability. I lived and breathed that. And yet I got no credit for that in 2020 when I was trying to remind people that we have a legal system and you need to work through the law. You can't go out and do what people did in Kenosha, which is burn down 8 blocks of the city. And then we had an Illinois teenager come into Kenosha and kill 2 Black Lives Matter protesters. 5 weeks after that happened in Kenosha, I declared a curfew in Wauwatosa for 5 nights because we were worried about the same things happening here. And I got condemned by many people for that, but we ended up with $16,000 worth of broken windows. No Black Lives Matter protesters were killed, and we didn't have any blocks burning down in Wauwatosa. What I've told people is in times of crisis, you need a North Star. And the two North Stars I looked for were, one, my conscience. I quoted Abraham Lincoln, "We move forward with firmness in the right as God gives us to see the right." That's your conscience. And then the other North Star, of course, always has to be the law. I've been a lawyer for over 40 years. I worked for a federal judge. I've taken 8 oaths of office of various kinds to support and defend and uphold the constitutions of the state and the United States. And I will follow that and give people due process. But a lot of people didn't want to give Joseph Mensah due process. They didn't want to follow the law. They just wanted to feel what they felt. And I get that. But it was my job to make sure that the people in Wauwatosa and the property in Wauwatosa were safe, but also people who come into Wauwatosa, to the state's busiest medical center, to the state's busiest shopping mall, to colleges and universities, were all taken care of.
Dennis McBride, mayor of Wauwatosa, joins us. The book is called A City on the Edge, Pandemic, Protest, and Polarization. It's published by Indiana University Press. Get there at iupress.org. So in closing, Dennis, you ran for re-election, and you're serving your second term as mayor. So I'll ask you that question again. Why?
I had unfinished business. Wauwatosa is a wonderful mini metropolis in the center of the Milwaukee metropolitan area. We still have great things to do. Frankly, I also wanted vindication, and I got it. I won re-election by 17.5 points. I do want to make this point. This book, that you mentioned isn't just about Wauwatosa. It's about Seattle and Minneapolis and Portland and all the other places where things happened in 2020. The publisher didn't want just Wauwatosa. He was attracted, they were attracted by Wauwatosa as a microcosm, but it's a much bigger story. It's the story of America in 2020 and beyond, even to this day. So I hope people will read it and reflect on it.
Well, and to that end, I mean, certainly something we preach here a lot on the show, and I feel like I've got somebody in the choir loft here with me, and that is the value of running for local office at any given level. I mean, today or tomorrow's first day nomination papers can be taken out for some local offices. So I'm guessing you're not about to say, hey, it worked for me, but none of the rest of you should run for local office. We probably need people more than ever.
I was talking to an alderman yesterday about him running for re-election, and I said, you know, Mike, everybody ought to run for office at least once. It's really an important experience in our democracy. Getting to meet the voters, going door to door in the snow, finding out what people really want and what they think and what they need, that's really important. And it all happens at the beginning, at the part of government closest to home, which is local government.
Pat McBride, who we also visited with earlier, and he had the book, The Luckiest Boy in the World, and you two are brothers.
Twin brothers.
And so to what degree is there any friendly competition here now on book sales? Because his book was pretty terrific. I read that one cover to cover. So you got any family bet going on this one?
Well, I was the co-author of his book. So
there you go. So you already get half credit. You're already a head start.
I'm competing with myself.
Dennis McBride, thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking to you again. A City on the Edge, Pandemic Protest and Polarization. See it at Indiana University Press, iupress.org, or wherever you get your books. Dennis, thank you so much. Have a great day. Happy holidays to you.
Thanks to you, and happy holidays to you and everyone else. Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's a real pleasure to get to talk to him about the value of running for local office and serving there. Jane Mattenair is on the way. Two more weeks of Mattenair on Air before her retirement, so we'll find out what she and Greg Bach are planning for this week. And then we're fully loaded with guests for the week here, including Congressman Mark Bocan coming up on Thursday. And of course, you can follow what I do at Up North News by heading over to upnorthnewswi.com and subscribing to our newsletter there as well. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Tomorrow on the program, Congressman Mark Bocan will be joining us. The government shutdown is over, but the gridlock appears to be rolling on, and that's just within the Republican caucus. We'll talk more to Congressman Bocan about the things that are and are not happening in the nation's capital. And Sean O'Malley will be along to talk about your money and the markets and the data that we're getting now that the shutdown is over, how reliable it is, or what still seems to be missing. And then the question that I feel like it's growing with more and more people. How much of this economy is built on an AI bubble? And we have talked about this before, and I want to get an update from Sean on this, because there are a lot of factors that indicate that were it not for the rapid growth of AI and the stock prices of those companies, all the other economic indicators would have us in bad shape right now. So those AI numbers might be artificially inflating the state of the health of our economy. Small wonder that we have a president and others who are doing all they can to keep fluffing up that price and those AI companies, because that's the thing that's providing them with some cover right now. But it always seems like for these folks, it's just that there's always money lying around, and that the answer for everything is a tax break. And I noted that in a Wisconsin Public Radio article about the dueling bills in the legislature about bills that would reduce the cost for in vitro fertilization, IVF. And we have talked to State Representative Jody Emerson from Eau Claire before about her measure, which would require health insurers in Wisconsin to cover the costs of IVF and fertility preservation treatment. She said that, you know, this is part of healthcare. And if you're going to be a health insurance company, then why shouldn't a health insurance company help pay for it? Well, Republicans call that a mandate, and they, you know, their answer for everything is a tax break. And so that's what they've put in place. There's a Republican bill in the legislature that would provide a tax credit, a non-refundable income tax credit of up to $5,000 for IVF-related expenses that aren't covered by insurance. Now, there would be a cutoff. It would be for individuals making less than $100,000 a year or couples making less than $200,000 a year. So if you're making $190,000 a year as a couple, you can still get this $5,000 non-refundable income tax credit. Well, by non-refundable, what that means is if you're, say, in a much lower bracket, say you're in the $60,000 bracket of income, and you really want to start a family with IVF, you don't pay that much in taxes that you may not get that $5,000 back. A refundable tax credit means you get that amount of money, whatever your tax liability is. So right from the get-go, the Republican bill does not help out with the upfront costs, as Representative Emerson points out. You know, you've got to pay for these things up front, and then the tax credit comes later on. But again, we're talking about a group of politicians for whom everything is about a tax credit and making sure that, you know, we do anything possible to avoid the having the super wealthy pay their fair share of taxes. Because after all, they write those really big campaign donation checks, right? Which takes me to our final story, and that is something that is being done by Michael Dell of Dell Computers, Michael and Susan Dell. On its face, sounds like a nice bit of generosity. You see, there are going to be these new tax accounts for new babies, and that's a bipartisan idea that's been talked about for some time. Now, of course, because Republicans are in charge, they want to call them Trump accounts. And these would be investment accounts that are opened up for children from birth and that, you know, a certain amount of money could go into it. And then the parents and others could keep putting money into it so that it grows over the course of the years. And that's all fine and good. It's just that in this new story, Michael Dell and his wife Susan say they are going to be donating to roughly 25 million children. And what they're going to do is help put an additional $250 into the accounts of these children. Now, not all children. The money will go to children who were born in 2016 through 2024 and who live in a zip code where the median household income is less than $150,000 a year. So again, that's a net positive where you have, you know, the help is going to people who would most benefit from it. Now, if you're doing the math here, what that means is the amount that the Dells are donating to put an extra $250 into every one of these new accounts, $6.25 billion. They are donating $6.25 billion for these accounts. Who could possibly have a crossword to say about that? Well, buckle up. Here we go. The Dells are worth an estimated $148 billion. This is roughly 4% of their net worth. What are you buying with that besides, you know, the feel-good aspect of it? And again, that's a perfectly fine thing. But it's also a heck of an investment if you're looking to curry favor and get more tax breaks. Because, I mean, the question has to be asked. How does anybody have $6 billion just lying around that you can give away on a whim and get a lot of good press for? Now, if there were a wealth tax, the Dells would still be fabulously wealthy. And we wouldn't have to depend on the charity of the very wealthy to make sure that we can educate our kids and to make sure that they have investment accounts. These are things we could be doing amongst ourselves if we had a tax code that was not so out of whack. There are people who say, oh, well, if there's a wealth tax, the wealthy, they won't innovate. They won't create jobs. That, folks, is BS. We have a broken tax system if anybody's got $6 billion lying around. My thanks to today's guests and to you for being here. I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News, part of Courier Newsroom, a pro-democracy newsroom. We'll catch you tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. here up north.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.